So we're at the Unitarian Church, and it was a forum on climate and the food system. And one of the speakers was Jan Storm, who I've known from the Citizens Climate Lobby. So Jan, what were some of the points you were trying to make?
Right. So I was trying to let people know about the power of the agricultural system to address the climate crisis. If the full capacity of its ability to remove and sequester carbon was actually made real. And so it was really mostly educational. So I kind of talked about the need to both stop putting carbon into the atmosphere, but also the need to take it out. Mm-hmm. We don't need to spend trillions of dollars developing carbon capture and sequestration technology. We have it. It's been working for hundreds of millions of years by photosynthesis in partnership with the soil microbiome through processes of symbiosis, and it can capture and store up to 20%, well, with other natural solutions, with better forest management and wetland management, it can capture up to 20% of the greenhouse gas emissions that we need to meet our net emissions goals.
Now, I know California's done a lot trying to help farmers with the idea about putting carbon back in the soil, and there's been some proposals here in New York which have had sort of lukewarm support. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what are things that we could be doing collectively to sort of promote, I guess, this concept of regenerative agriculture?
I think that there's a lot of co-benefits that come to everybody, that come to our communities when farmers or producers are following regenerative practices. For example, the reality is that a farmer or farmers who transition away from fossil fuel dependent agriculture, when they move into regenerative agriculture and they prioritize healthy soil, their soil, by not using chemicals and by using things like compost and by using things like cover crops, or if they're raising livestock by doing rotational grazing, what they find is that their income, their net income actually goes up. And when local farmers' incomes actually go up, it's better for them and it's also better for their communities. So it builds communities. It also makes, when their soil is healthier, it makes their land more resilient to the impacts of climate change. So in periods of drought, the soil doesn't dry out so quickly. In periods of flooding, the soil percolates the water more quickly. Another co-benefit is that when food is grown in this soil, which is managed regeneratively, it is more nutrient dense. So you get a real tomato instead of kind of a cardboard tomato that comes from an industrial produced greenhouse grown tomato. So I think maybe it's just realizing all of the co-benefits that all of us receive when there's this transition to regenerative agriculture.
Now, for my last question, I know the Citizens Climate Lobby for years has been pushing the concept of a carbon tax, particularly what's known as 100% fee and dividend. Still seems to be a lot of opposition politically to it, but why should we have a carbon tax?
Yeah. So basically, the people that are emitting carbon right now, it's causing tremendous damage. They're not paying the cost of that damage. And so if you had a price on carbon and you made them actually pay the social cost of that pollution, given the system that we have, the idea is that they would want to save that money and stop releasing it. In terms of agriculture, it's a little bit more complicated, but the idea is that within agriculture, the industrial agriculture system is a fossil fuel-based system. It's not just the fossil fuel that industrial growers and producers, and a lot of them are not small or mid-family-sized farmers. They are corporate businesses. It's not just the machinery. It's the chemicals. Fertilizer is natural gas-based. Pesticides and herbicides are fossil fuel-based. So the idea is that a carbon tax would maybe level the playing field a little bit for regenerative farmers. Their costs wouldn't be going up with a carbon tax, whereas industrial agriculture would have increased costs. Yeah, that's a little iffy because then the consumer, you know, you don't want to harm the consumers, especially those that are a little bit more stretched than others. You don't want the price of their food to go up. So we need to also simultaneously find ways of incentivizing or helping more farmers transition more to regenerative farming with simultaneous policies to a carbon tax.
And that's been Jan Storm with Citizen Climate Lobby. Next, we catch up with Scott Kellogg from the Radix Center. Scott, what was sort of your message this evening to the crowd about climate and food security, food policy issues?
My message was that we need to be working in the communities that we're living in and addressing food security issues on a whole variety of levels in awareness of the fact that food access and food justice is a hugely complex, wicked sustainability issue that needs to be approached from a variety of angles, everything including community gardens, inner city farmers markets, buyers cooperatives, supermarkets, a whole number of approaches are going to be necessary to address it. But one way that we can start is working on a small scale, decentralized, community-based level, working with the numerous vacant parcels that are within the city of Albany. And one way to go about fixing them is through community composting initiatives, where we are intercepting the huge amounts of organic matter that's presently just going into the landfill every day, breaking down aerobically and turning into methane gas and further driving climate change, and aerobically composting that in the surface of the earth and using that to grow soil to produce nutrient-dense food to feed food-insecure communities in our urban environments.
Now, one thing I had not heard before this evening was that apparently growing sunflowers is one way to get lead out of the soil?
Unfortunately, it's not that simple. Plants of a number of varieties can uptake heavy metals under particular conditions. Really, to cause lead to be soluble and mobile and to be uptaken into plants, you need to acidify the soil, which is very damaging to it. That whole process is called phytoextraction. I'm personally much more of an advocate of compost remediation, where we're applying completed compost to soils that may have moderate levels of lead contamination, and it has the effect of, well, a number of things. One, creating a physical barrier to separate people from contaminated soil that may be below. It's neutralizing the pH of the soil, which is preventing lead from becoming mobile. So that way you can more safely grow plants in that soil and worry less about them uptaking metals out of the soil. As another thing that it does is to reduce the biological availability of lead. Lead likes to bind with fats. It's what we call lipophilic, and it basically gets bound up in the molecular structure of compost and then is less likely to be uptaken into plant tissues. But also, if it is accidentally ingested or inhaled, less likely to stick to receptor sites in the brains of children where it causes neurological impairments.
About a minute left. So what is the response about the Capital District to the idea, let's try to recover these vacant lots and turn them into, you know, food plots?
There is a lot of work being done in this area, and we have the Albany County Land Bank, which has been tasked with taking a number of properties that previously were caught up in the toxic cycle of investments, where people would purchase them, not pay taxes, they'd be foreclosed upon, and then repossessed, and trying to put them into the hands of community members, some of them being sold for as little as $100. So a lot of opportunity for residents to acquire a parcel of land in the city and use that as a food production operation.
If people want to find out more about the Radix Center or get involved, I assume you got a website and those type of entrances?
www.radixcenter.org.
And that was Scott Kellogg, and this has been Mark Dunning for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.